Welcome to Movie Muse Episode 6, Best Action Hero. MovieMuse.net is the home of movies, music and random musings, and in the main feature of today's show we'll be taking a look at two of the biggest action heroes of the last four decades and trying to agree which one's the best. We'll also have our usual features including Film Club, where we'll be looking at 2000's action thriller Way of the Gun, as well as Classic Scene, Three of the Best and Original Soundtrack. In the Movie Muse bunker today, we have our own team of ruthless mercenaries ready to take on whatever dirty job is required of them during the show. First up, we have the man with a vice-like grip and a penchant for JD and Diet Coke, the Chelmsford Crusher, Graham Mason.
Consider that a divorce.
Next, we have a man that spent most of his life in the grim northern wastes, which obviously makes him hard as nails, the Bradford Butcher, Gordon Sinclair.
Uzi 9mm.
Thirdly, we have a man so tough that even smashing out his front tooth on a night out won't stop him enjoying himself, the Maidstone Mauler, Simon Burton.
I had to let him go.
And finally, the brains behind our latest mission, overseeing this episode with military precision, I'm your host, Matt Korn, the Stoke-on-Trent schemer. Let's get into the action. First up, we've got a short update on what's been going on the MovieMuse.net website. Tying in with last month's podcast, you can read Graham's comprehensive review of all 10 seasons of Red Dwarf. There's also an article about one of the most influential and challenging games of all time, Donkey Kong, by yours truly. Gordon has provided some insight into Hollywood's Blacklist, a list of the most popular scripts submitted to major players in the industry, and also gives his first update of his progress on watching 250 films in a calendar year. And the entire team has given their thoughts on a trio of films from a galaxy far, far away in our Star Wars Original Trilogy box set review. So as usual, we'll kick off this episode with what have we been watching. Now, what we've mostly all been watching is a lot of films by the two movie stars that we'll be talking about in our main topic. But just in case anyone's had time to watch anything else, we'll go round the table and see. And first, let's go to Gordon. What have you been watching?
Well, obviously, with my 250 film challenge, I've been watching quite a few. I got through 30 in the last month. But the one that stands out isn't for any positive reason. I was unlucky enough to sit through London Has Fallen. And it's not only the worst film I've seen this month, it's the worst I've seen in the last 6 months, probably the last 12 months. It's a sequel to the surprise hit Olympus Has Fallen and features a pathetic script about the Prime Minister of England dying. Every head of every major state around the world converges on London for his funeral, which I'm pretty sure wouldn't happen. And then terrorists attack. And we've got a drawn-out cat-and-mouse affair where terrorists are trying to find and kill the US president because for some reason the US president is the only important person in London at the time, apart from having every other world leader there. They seem to think that the only person that matters is the US president, so they'll blow up the whole of London just to get the US president because, as we all know, America is where it's at. It's a pathetic script. The action is overdone. It starts off quite well, but it just gets far too much. And every failing that the film has is covered up by another round of bullets and another couple of explosions. It's hard to say anything positive about the film. I actually watch it and wonder how Gerard Butler ever got a leading role in any film. He's that poor. 1.5 stars for that one, I'm afraid.
Not even Morgan Freeman can save it.
Nope. The other film that I watched recently was Batman vs Superman, and I've been really looking forward to this. Some of the trailers seemed quite good. I liked the look of the new Lex Luthor. I was reserving my judgment on Ben Affleck as Batman to see how he did. And coming out of the film, it was shit. The film has got many, many problems, and thankfully, none of the actors are the problems. Every one of the new actors was really good. Jesse Eisenberg as Lex Luthor overdoes it a little bit, but is generally quite good fun. Ben Affleck is brilliant as Batman. I'm looking forward to him hopefully getting a standalone Batman film because he was really good and I'm not an Affleck fan normally. Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman was great. But the biggest problem with the film is Zack Snyder. He played it very slow, very long, and then overdid slow motion. So you've got a slow, long film with lots of slow motion in it. So it just becomes dreary. And the script is so thin, there's very little going on. It's just a very, very dull film. And all the special effects and explosions aren't going to save a very, very dull film like that. And it's such a shame because I was looking forward to seeing the big battle between the big two. But unfortunately, that's a little battle. And then the reason that they change from being enemies to best mates is because their mums have the same first name. And that is seriously what happens. I can't remember whether it's Batman is about to finish off Superman or the other way around. And one of them mentions the name Martha. And he's like, why did you say that name? and they find out they both have mums with the same name and become best friends and save the world. It's just shockingly bad script. So, unfortunately, I was bitterly disappointed. 2 stars.
I think most people have said the same thing as well, haven't they? Well, certainly about the slow motion.
Can I ask, is that really the reason why they become friends, just because their mum's name?
That's absolutely crazy. Yeah, everyone in the cinema was baffled when that happened. You could see people with a mouth open thinking, what? Seriously?
WTF.
It's not cutting-edge script writing, is it, that, really? I believe he's been removed, has he now, from the Justice League film?
Oh, is that true?
I don't know if that's true or a rumour, but if it's true, it sounds like a good thing. And if it's a rumour, then it sounds like it's a rumour that should become true.
Yeah, well, to be fair, he's been given 2 chances, hasn't he? He did Man of Steel, which was dreary, and then he did Batman vs Superman, which was dreary. So he's had his 2 chances and, you know, he must have been on a yellow card. So now he's got his second and he's off. It's only right that he goes. But like I say, Ben Affleck as Batman, I think he'll do a great job.
Okay, let's move on then, Simon.
Apart from what we've watched the research this one, I watched The Incredibles the other day. It just happened to be on telly. Nothing exciting. Seen it before. So, yeah, I quite enjoy it. It's all right, I suppose. It's how to make the films go. And I've got back into Bottom. I haven't watched that for years. And
you've got back into Bottom?
Yeah, it's Ladies Bottom. Ladies Bottoms. Yeah, I've just got back into it. I haven't watched it for ages. So, then my usual bit of Father Ted. Just finished off watching that the whole way through again. That's about all I've watched, I'm afraid.
Okay, no worries. Graham?
Well, after watching Deadpool and enjoying that, I decided to look back to Ryan Reynolds' earlier superhero film, which wasn't quite as successful, which was Green Lantern, which was released, I think, in 2011. I've had it on DVD for a while, and I finally got around to watching it. It's got a terrible reputation. I think it pretty much flopped at the cinema as well. To be honest, it's not as terrible as its reputation suggests, but it's still not a great movie. The plot is, even for a superhero movie, it's pretty ludicrous in places. The only thing that really stands out is that there's a pretty good performance from Ryan Reynolds at the centre of it. He obviously still plays a kind of jokey type character. The ending is rushed, and to be honest, it's all a bit of a mess, but I would say it only goes on for an hour and a half, and it's fairly enjoyable for that hour and a half. There's plenty of semi-decent special effects, so I would give that probably 2.5 out of 5.
Okay, that just leaves me, and I went to see a film recently at the cinema that I really did enjoy, and the film was Eddie the Eagle, which is something we covered in the trailer a couple of episodes back, and I was quite pleased to find that the film was at least as good, if not better, than what the trailer promised. I thought it was a great, heartwarming, feel-good movie about not giving up on your dreams no matter what the odds are against you. It was funny, but not in a really sort of cheesy way. It's not in a way that detracts from the drama of the story. And even though you know how it ends, the film still somehow manages to build up tension during the final scenes at the Winter Olympics, which I think is testament to the filmmakers to actually get some kind of tension in a film where you know what the result is and you know it's not even a good result particularly. I also thought it had a really good soundtrack with a mixture of 80s pop and electronic music that perfectly captured the 80s era that it was set in. And in terms of the cast, I thought Taron Egerton was excellent as Eddie the Eagle, as were the 2 younger kids who were actually brothers who played him in the early scenes that looked very similar and also very similar to Taron Egerton. I think they all captured the goofy, likeable nature of the man himself. Hugh Jackman was good as well as the coach, although that character I found out afterwards is completely fictional and didn't actually really exist. The best supporting character for me, though, was Joe Hartley as Eddie the Eagle's mum, who plays the role really well as a supportive mum that anyone would really want. Downside for me, fairly small, but some of the CGI scenes were a bit below par. Particularly, I noticed the crowds at the Olympics were obviously kind of superimposed and tiled a bit. Other than that, the only disappointment was finding out that actually most of the story isn't really how it happened in real life. But otherwise, it was a really enjoyable film that celebrates Britain's have-a-go spirit. And while, much like Eddie, I suspect it won't be winning any awards, it's definitely worth watching. So that's 4 stars from me for that.
Mm. And I'll just say, I also went to see it. Have almost identical views to your own, Matt. And I wrote up a review for the website, so if anyone wants to read that, it's at moviemuse.net. And I also gave it 4 stars. I liked the little nod they gave to the Jamaican bobsleigh team as well, which was the same Olympics.
My jaw dropped a bit of that. I thought, surely that didn't happen at the same Olympics. But yeah, apparently it did. Amazing. It's just a great story. I think, you know, even though it's a story about basically a loser, you really got behind him, even though you knew exactly what was going to happen. It was insane, really, in that respect.
I went to see it with a friend who's never heard of Eddie the Eagle. He's about 10 years younger than me, and so he'll have been a little bit young when those Olympics happened. So he wasn't aware of it at all. And we came out, and his words to me was, well, that was all a bit pointless. He didn't even win a medal. So I wonder whether a younger audience are going to actually get the fact that this is about not giving up on your dream, and your dream doesn't have to be a gold medal. Your dream can be lower than that. But he didn't get that. He thought there was going to be some twist and he was going to win a silver medal or something. And I think that would have absolutely destroyed the film if they'd have tried to do anything like
that. Yeah.
They did in Cool Runnings. If you remember in Cool Runnings, they're on a world record time when they crash on their last run. And that's just completely stupid and reinforces this American win-at-all-costs mentality against ours that is, you know, do your best.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the reaction from American audiences is to the film, because you're right, they'll be like, probably not knowing who Eddie the Eagle is, they'll probably be expecting him to come good at the end of it and not really thinking that to come good for him was purely just to compete in the Olympics. That was his dream, it wasn't to win, it was just to compete. Okay, let's move on now to Film Club, where we're going to take a look at a film chosen by one of the Movie Muse team last time. We've all watched the film, we're going to give our opinions on it now. The film choice was Graham's, and he chose Way of the Gun. So first of all, Graham, can you tell us why you chose this film and what you personally think of it?
Yeah, Way of the Gun, as I said on the last episode, it's written and directed by Christopher McQuarrie, and was his follow-up from the Oscar-winning Usual Suspects. It stars Benicio del Toro and Ryan Phillippe as two criminals who hatch a plan to kidnap a pregnant woman and demand a ransom. However, with the baby actually a surrogate for a shady rich character played by Scott Wilson, who many people might recognise these days from The Walking Dead, things soon get very complicated. There's lots of violent gunplay, double-crossing going on. Unfortunately, for Christopher McQuarrie anyway, his career, it was a bit of a bomb at the box office. And I chose it really because, it's funny, I know one of you guys mentioned that it's one of my top movies. I think it might be on the site, but it isn't really, because I know it's a movie that has a lot of flaws. There's far too much going on in it. It's got a very saggy middle section, which could probably be lost completely. It goes on for too long. Probably you could fit in the story easily into under 2 hours. But I really like it. It's got a bit of a cult following these days. Why do I like it? Because I think it's got some terrific performances in it. I don't think Benicio del Toro, I'm not a particular fan of his. I don't think he's ever been better than this. And also it's got James Caan in it, who's brilliant as well. I think it's a fairly intriguing plot. There's a lot of goings-on, people double-crossing each other, as I mentioned, and all sorts of twists and turns. And it has got lots of exciting gunplay in it. The two lead characters, I think they're hinted at, they've got some sort of military background, so they're very obviously, a lot of the fights and everything are very realistic. And my favourite thing about it is the score. I think it's got a fantastic score as well. Really a Western-style score, which obviously fits the theme of the movie very well. It's a very Western-themed sort of crime thriller. So really, I chose it because I know it's not a perfect movie, and I'm just intrigued to know what my fellow movie muses make of it. I would give Way of the Gun 3.5 out of 5. It's just one of those days!
It's all about the he said, she said. For the record, I'll call myself Mr. Parker. My associate will be Mr. Longbow. At some point, it became clear to us that our path had been chosen and we had nothing to offer the world. So we stepped off the path and went looking for the fortune that we knew was looking for us. And here was the thing. The longest distance between two points is a kidnapper and his money. But we were through jerking around.
So there you go. Way of the Gun. And first up, how about Simon and his thoughts on it?
Thanks, Graham. To be honest, I found it hard what to make of it, really. I tried to like it, but by the end of the film, I just didn't really like it, to be honest. I just thought it wasn't really much going on with the story. They grab the girl, they get chased a bit, James Caan turns up, makes him an offer, goes away again, could have shot him, they could have cleared that all up in about 10 minutes, but obviously that would make a good movie. But it was, just didn't really do anything for me, to be honest. Didn't find it particularly interesting. Quite like the way they, you know, he left him for dead at the end. They got away with the money. James Caan found out that was his daughter. We didn't know that at the time. But I just didn't really find anything interesting about the film. Didn't find it particularly exciting. You know, and I watched it all the way through and thought, a bit confusing, a bit convoluted in places. Story wasn't that great. No, not one I was particularly impressed with. You know, there's a bit of good shooting in it, but a lot of the time it's just, you know, some of them are like a bit like the A-Team. They're missing each other from about 10 yards away. And I thought, well, come on. It's not that. It's like, you know, this isn't Hannibal and the guys. So, no, I didn't find it particularly exciting or interesting, so I'm going to give it 2 out of 5.
Apparently, they had, like, a proper army person or ranger or something, so, like, when they're shooting all the time, there's proper gaps when they should actually be reloading and things like that, but obviously, okay. There still weren't great shots, most of them.
No.
So, Matt, what did you make of Way of the Gun?
Well, some of what you said is exactly what I'd got in mind for saying as well. I enjoyed the first sort of 10 to 15 minutes with the kidnapping scene. I thought that was really clever. It was like really elaborately choreographed, almost like a game of chess, I thought, between the two kidnappers and the two minders of the girl played by Juliette Lewis. And much like you just said, it really sags in the middle. I found it really too talky for much of the next hour and was starting to lose interest in it. Several scenes I thought should have been trimmed down or even cut out completely. But then when you get to the last 45 minutes, I thought that was really good. Probably the ending sort of gunfight scene is probably still a little bit too long. But the whole idea of the gunfight juxtaposed with the birth of Juliette Lewis's character's baby, again with the really like interesting choreography with the kidnappers, as you mentioned, possibly with the army background working strategically together. There's one scene that particularly made me almost, not exactly retch, but it was a bit unpleasant, which was a bit where Ryan Philippe jumps into the pile of broken glass.
That's horrible.
And the big shard of glass gets stuck in his arm. Yeah, that was horrible. My main problem with it really is it's just a bunch of unpleasant characters doing unpleasant things to one another, and you don't really root for anybody. You know, even Juliette Lewis's character, who's kind of the kidnap victim, she's got her own agenda as well. But overall, I thought it was reasonably enthralling at times, mostly decent acting, as you mentioned, and I don't think it was deserving at all of the poor reception it got when it was released. There's way worse films that have performed far better at the box office, so I'm going to go with 3 stars.
Thank you, Matt. And finally, Gordon?
Well, I think I'm similar to everybody in that it's a bit of a mixed bag. I found on the whole that it was just too disjointed. It felt like set pieces that were put back together in the wrong order, maybe. I just found that the plot jumped around too much. There were some really good bits, particularly, as Matt's already said, the start and with the kidnapping's brilliant. But the scene that sticks in my head is just the silly, funny bit where they're at the clinic and it's, why do you think you'd make a good donor?
I've never killed a man. I beg your pardon? I said I've never killed a man. I didn't ask if you had. You asked why I thought I was qualified. I think of that as qualification.
And I'm just wondering why that in particular strikes you as an important qualification for semen donation.
I would say that's a big fucking qualification. Excuse me, a very important qualification.
No one's ever said that before.
You ever asked?
No.
You should.
For some reason, that cracks me up. And now, whenever anybody asks me a question about why I think I'd be good at something, that's my stock answer now. And I just found that was just brilliant. And it wasn't just that single joke. It was the answers that they were both giving. And I thought the comedy between the two lead characters was really good. It was that middle bit that kind of killed it. And then because of how saggy that middle bit became, I lost interest in the final firefight. And I've done some reading up and I find it really interesting that the gunfighting was real gunfighting in terms of, like you say, the time between reloads, and there's no rapid fire from a gun that can't rapid fire and all of that. I suppose you'd expect with a film called Way of the Gun that they've actually understood the gunplay. But yeah, I just found it a little bit too here and there, all over the place. The other thing I wasn't keen on was Ryan Philippe's accent. I'm not sure which part of America he was supposed to be from, but for an American, I thought he had a pretty poor American accent.
He sounded like he was talking through his nose some of the time, didn't he?
Well, to be fair, he does that a lot anyway. I know he's not been in a massive amount of big films, but he is a bit nasal anyway, but that accent just didn't work for me. I did think Del Toro was brilliant, though, and I do like him as an actor, and I thought he played it well. That little bit of cockiness and comedy that he puts in there, I think, is great. But overall, a bit too haphazard, jumps around with the plot, and I would give it 3 stars.
It's definitely a case of style over substance, I think, definitely. Okay, that gives Way of the Gun, then, an average score of 3.
3 stars puts Way of the Gun joint third on the film club leaderboard with Secret of Kells.
Wow, that's no recommendation, is it?
Yeah, that somehow seems unfair.
Raise mine up to 3 stars.
Sorry to put you through that, lads.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the first, as I said, the first 10 or 15 minutes, but then
last 15,
it was the
first
bit where they got to the hotel, the motel room, and they just were in there forever talking and talking and talking, and then there was a bunch of people talking in the baddie's house as well. It's like, oh, just stop talking and do something.
It's funny you should say that about Zack Snyder earlier, because it is like the guy won an Oscar for Usual Suspects, and he needed someone to like say to him, look, you can't make a movie like this. You've got like 20 minutes in the middle where nothing happens. You have, in movies, you have like about 5-10 minutes where nothing happens in the middle, where the characters take a breather and so does the audience. But you can't have like 20-25 minutes. But he was obviously allowed to just go along with it because he was an Oscar winner and do whatever he wanted. And as a result, he fucking killed his career off.
But it certainly wasn't the worst. Anyway, let's move on to the next film club choice, and that's with Gordon. Gordon, what have you got for us for next episode?
Okay, well, the film I've picked is Coherence, and it's a low-budget American science fiction thriller. And I was trying to work out how I could describe this film without spoiling some of the things that happen. And it concerns me to say that, because that makes it sound like a lot happens that I don't want to spoil for you. But there's not actually a lot that happens that I can spoil. It's just, I think, the fresher you are when you go in, the more you'll get out of it, which is the way I felt. But basically, this inventive low-budget sci-fi yarn begins as four couples gather for a dinner party, but their plans for a quiet night are interrupted by a comet that's passing perilously close to the Earth. It causes a blackout, and without phones, the internet, or electricity, how will they cope? While it's unlikely that the quantum physics would stand up to rigorous analysis, the philosophical questions about alternative worlds, identity, and fate provide some food for thought, and there are some tense moments and whispers of a sinister atmosphere.
Amir's bringing Glory to dinner.
Amir's a total jackass.
Everyone else still not have service.
I got zero.
No. On the news, you know, they're talking about the comet.
Yeah, yeah.
Mueller's comet.
After it passed, people get lost. They would end up in the wrong home.
What?
And they keep telling people that this can happen.
The chicken tastes like tuna. It must be Mueller's comet. The whole neighborhood is out of power. Except for a house about two blocks up.
What the hell was that?
Mike, is that door locked?
I'll check it.
Baby, stay away from the door.
I can't stand this. I'm going to go see what's going on. I'm sorry, but I'm going.
See that?
Oh, my God.
This is bad. This is really bad.
Wait, what's the box?
That was at the other house.
Oh, my God. Baby, what did you see?
We don't even belong here.
Everybody knew about this except me.
We have to just get through the night, okay?
We are not from this house. We are visitors.
I'm crossing all kinds of boundaries.
I don't want to be stuck here.
What is going on?
Jesus!
Sounds intriguing. Looking forward to that one.
Yeah, it does sound interesting. We'll definitely look forward to watching that and talking about it on the next episode. Now time to move on to tonight's main topic, which will see us reviewing the careers of arguably the two greatest action movie heroes of all time. Over 5 rounds, we'll take a look at their best moments and a few of their worst, and at the end of each round, we'll vote to decide who comes out on top. So without further ado, let's introduce the participants in this epic battle. From New York City, age 69 and standing 5'9½", star of over 60 movies and current holder of the Golden Globe Award for Best Supporting Actor, Sylvester Stallone. And his opponent, from the village of Tal in Austria, age 68 and standing 6'2", a winner of the Mr. Universe and Mr. Olympia bodybuilding titles on multiple occasions, and former governor of California, Arnold Schwarzenegger. Before we start, you might think, as we go through this, that some of the films we're talking about aren't exactly action films. The Rocky films in particular might be classed better as sports dramas, but there's no argument that Rocky is a heroic character in those films and that those films are very much part of Stallone's main body of work. So for the purposes of this comparison, we'll be treating certain films as action films, even though they may not actually fit exactly into that category. We'll also be covering all films that fall outside of the two stars' usual comfort zone in one of our 5 rounds. Let's start with round one, the first big hit. For our first round, we'll be discussing the two films that thrust their respective stars into the Hollywood mainstream and undoubtedly their most iconic roles, Rocky and The Terminator. Two very different films, but a great starting point for discussion about both actors. So let's talk about Rocky, and I'm going to go to Gordon first. What are your thoughts about Rocky?
Okay, I don't think I've talked about Rocky too much on the podcast before, but it is definitely, ever since I saw it, probably in about 1980, been my favourite film, beating Star Wars and everything else that a child is supposed to love. We've talked about Eddie the Eagle already, about this loser rising up and not giving up on his dream, and The funny thing about Rocky is he probably didn't even have that dream until it was given to him when Apollo decides that he needs to fight, you know, this everyman. I just love the drama of it. I love that it's feel good, but there's enough grit. It feels real. You know, it's not glossy. You see that Rocky's got no money, he's got no skills, he's got no brains, but he's a hard worker and he gets to where he wants to be. Rocky has always been my favourite film and I won't take a bad word against it.
Well, for me, you won't get a bad word against it. I think a lot of people see Rocky retrospectively as just another typical brainless Stallone action film, and I don't think the sequels help that in some respects, certainly the later sequels. But it is a great film, it is a drama, it's not really anything about boxing, that just happens to be what happens at the end of it. It's very much a film about a guy trying to make more of his life and also being involved in a romance with a person who's incredibly shy, and they both kind of bring the best out of one another. So I'll agree with you totally, Rocky is certainly one of the best films of the 70s. Graham, what about you? What are your thoughts on Rocky?
Well, it's quite interesting because I didn't actually see Rocky until quite recently, and I haven't seen any of the sequels. But obviously, as a cinema fan, I can appreciate its qualities despite the fact I'm watching it 40 years too late. I think it's just got a great story at the centre of it. You've got this guy who's just like a nothing, and he goes on to be something at the end of the movie, and it's a fantastic journey, the whole movie. Stallone is great in it as well. He seems suited to that particular role, which presumably why he played it again and again and again. I also thought the female lead, which I think was Talia Shire, was it?
That's right.
I thought she was very good as well. So overall, despite the fact I'm watching it quite a lot after it was originally released, it's become one of my favourite movies as well.
All good for Rocky so far. Simon, what are your thoughts on Rocky?
Well, everyone's covered exactly what I would have said about it, really. It's the lovable guy who comes from nowhere, works his way for hard work, works his way to the top, and does make it. And by the end of the film, you're so rooting for him in that final fight. You just think, my God, how could someone go through that? A fight going on for that long and someone standing up to that. And, you know, he gets absolutely pounded and he still comes back. So by the end of the film, you love Rocky. You really root for him. It's just a feel-good film. And it's something from the 70s. It's such an uplifting film when a lot of the time of that era, was a lot of films weren't. A lot of it was quite downbeat, and this is about someone coming from that background and making themselves better themselves and kind of top. So yeah, I think it's great.
What it did for me is it proved Stallone as a scriptwriter. What he did do that was very clever, I don't know whether he was thinking at the time that there's a franchise opportunity here, so let's not have him win because we can follow up with future films where the winning starts to happen. But that climax of that fight and it being a draw is just so not what I was expecting, because in a film that's a feel-good film, you expect the hero to win. And the hero didn't win. He was a winner, because that draw meant more to him than winning would have done to Apollo. I just think that that was a really clever way to end that film without making it a trite Hollywood film. It really set him up as more than just what was to come in the 80s, which most people saw him as just an action hero, when actually he wrote a lot of those films as well.
I don't think he was thinking about a sequel. I think the draw is just all he wanted to do was prove that he could stand up to this guy who should have been head and shoulders above him in terms of ability. But there was a very similar story going on in real life, in that this was pretty much Stallone's last chance to make a decent film, because he'd had no success in filmmaking. He'd got this script and someone made it and it made him into a star, but it could have just have easily turned around just like in the film. Rocky got a pummeling in the first round and it went nowhere. So it's an interesting parallel to what was going on in real life to what was actually going on the screen, I think. So that's Rocky. What do we all think about The Terminator? Let's go to Simon first.
When The Terminator first came out, Arnie had only done things like Conan and a few stuff in the 70s, Pumping Iron and bits and pieces. So it wasn't quite the style you really would know about as much. And you've got this futuristic sci-fi scenario of this guy coming back from the future. And then as soon as Arnie comes in, goes into the police station and just destroys the place, and then you think, oh, actually, this is going to be something big. It's violent, but it's justifiable violence. You can see how he would just keep going and going and going to get to his end goal, because that's what he's programmed to do. And yeah, just think it's an excellent film, and Arnie plays the role perfectly. You can just imagine him as the Terminator with no real feelings or emotions and just plays it like a robot as he is. One might say that Arnie's acting all over, but seriously, it's actually just the way he plays it, and it's just an amazing film. I love it.
Graham?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of my favourite films as well. It's quite interesting, at the time, 1984, when it was released, there weren't really many films like The Terminator out. It was very violent, it was a sci-fi theme to it, and obviously an excellent director as well. And it's interesting, I know that we've said that these films aren't too similar, but I think that actually Arnold Schwarzenegger was at a bit of an impasse when he made The Terminator, because studios were looking at ways to take advantage of the fact that he had great screen presence, but obviously couldn't act for toffee. And I think The Terminator was what helped him become the superstar he is today. Well, in fact, I'm sure it is, because it gave him a role which suited him perfectly. As Simon says, he didn't really have to act, did he? He was just like an emotionless robot. It's got a great performance by Linda Hamilton, which is quite often overlooked as well, and Michael Biehn kind of in a thankless role. And I think the plot is very lean as well. There's not a lot to it, is there? I mean, it's kind of like the polar opposite of Way of the Gun. It's just basically the robot's out to kill Sarah Connor, and that's it. So Terminator, one of my favourite films of all time as well, and in my opinion, probably the one that gave us the Austrian superstar we know today.
Yeah, can't really argue with anything that's been said so far. I'm a massive fan of the whole Terminator series. I know people think it's got worse over time and don't like the later ones, but I actually love all of them. I love a good time travel story anyway, and combining time travel with this unstoppable killing machine that just rampages through everything is just brilliant. It's also visually quite stunning at times. It's all done pretty much in darkness, and I think that really helps him kind of move around in the shadows and stalk people. The scene that Simon mentioned where he comes to the police station and asks to see Sarah Connor, and he's told that he can't see her, and he utters his now famous line for the first time, "I'll be back," and then drives back through the entrance of the police station in the car, is just fantastic, and then goes on another rampage to try and track her down. Personally, I think it's better than the sequel, although a lot of people might disagree with that. So Terminator, excellent film. And that just leaves Gordon.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue. I think it's a fantastic film. I think it's quite interesting what you're saying, Graham, that it was possibly Arnie's last chance. I mean, there's some great parallels between Stallone and Arnie in that, you know, they're both virtually the same age. I think there's about 6 months between them. They both were in their first film in 1969, so their careers started at the same point. But Rocky was Stallone's big break in 1976, so it took him 7 years to hit big. It took Arnie 15 years, and he needed a film that played to his strengths, and this absolutely did. Like you say, it's a lean script, which is fantastic. I liked that. Like Matt, time travel is one of my favourite types of films. It felt like a dark, gritty indie film or something. It didn't feel like a big Hollywood blockbuster, whereas Terminator 2 flips that on its head and becomes this massive, big action film. Terminator is almost not an action film. It's more of a thriller. So I love the film. Nothing bad to say about Terminator either.
Pretty glowing praise all round for both films. So it now comes to the moment where we decide who wins this round. Is it going to be Stallone for Rocky, or is it going to be Schwarzenegger for the Terminator? So we'll go to Gordon first. I think we know who you're going to go for based on what you've been saying, but let's have the decision.
I think this is a really, really difficult one to choose. Because the films are so different, I find it hard, because if they were up against virtually any other film in their own categories, these two would both win. But Rocky has to come first, so Stallone for me.
Okay, Graham?
Again, yeah, very difficult choice, but nostalgically it's got to be Arnie and the Terminator for me, because that's a film I saw in the 80s, whereas Rocky, I don't think it's quite got the same appeal to me, having watched it 40 years later. I can appreciate it a lot, but it'll always be Arnie and the Terminator for me.
Simon?
Yeah, love both of them. Both excellent, as you say, very different, but also very important for both stars. But I'm going to go for Terminator and Arnie. I like the sci-fi side more than just the boxing side, but they're both excellent. So it's a hard choice, but it's going to be Terminator.
Okay, so that leaves me to either give the victory to Schwarzenegger or take it to a draw. Well, if you look at my biography on the Movie Muse website, you'll find that my number 5 film is The Terminator and my number 6 film is Rocky. So you'd think I'd probably go with Arnie for this one. However, looking at the two films, I have to say that I think The Terminator would be almost as good a film without Arnie in it, whereas Rocky without Stallone would not exist. So I'm going to go with Stallone for Rocky, just because he had more of an influence on that film than Schwarzenegger had an influence on the Terminator, which takes it to a draw. Now, in the case of a draw, we refer to our tiebreaker, which is based on a complex formula that I've calculated, which is box office takings in millions times IMDb rating. Whichever one gets the highest is the winner. The Terminator, 634.23, and Rocky was 1822.5. Therefore, Rocky wins the first round, Stallone wins the first round.
Adrian, we did it!
Fuck you, asshole.
With Stallone taking round one, let's move on to round two, which is called Hit After Hit After Hit. For the second round, we'll be looking at all the films that helped turn both actors into the biggest action movie stars of the 80s. Stallone kicked off the 80s with Night Hawks before continuing the Rocky Balboa story in Rocky 3. And in 1982, he took on the role of his most memorable action hero, the Vietnam veteran John Rambo, in First Blood. Two more Rambo films would follow in 1985 and 1988, along with the fourth installment of the Rocky franchise, also in 1985. A string of less warmly received movies would close out the 80s, including Cobra, Over the Top and Lock Up. The 80s would see Arnold Schwarzenegger come to prominence as an action star. He starred in the two mostly forgettable Conan films in the early 80s before his iconic performance in The Terminator. From there he went on to star in a series of hits including Commando, Predator and The Running Man, although there were also a couple of lackluster offerings in the form of Raw Deal and Red Sonja. Both actors would end their 80s action output with movies from the buddy cop genre, Arnie teaming up with James Belushi in 1988's Red Heat, while Stallone works with Kurt Russell in Tango and Cash. From this point onwards, we're going to start off with one person who's going to tell us what they think about one of the stars and their films. And for Stallone, we're going to go to Gordon first.
I like almost every Stallone film that he's ever done, so I can be a little bit blinkered. Certainly the big hitters of the 80s for me were the Rocky films. Rocky 3, where Clubber Lang joins in. I can't believe that Mr. T was nominated for a Razzie for Worst Newcomer, which I think is amazing because his role as Clubber Lang is just played perfectly. It's almost a role created for him. So I was quite surprised at that. But Rocky 3 is certainly one of the highlights. Rocky 4, again, with Ivan Drago, played by Dolph Lundgren, was another fantastic, if a little bit silly, East-West kind of battle. We had First Blood, which probably I would class that as a drama rather than an action film, but there's plenty of action in it. That's a film with heart, and that's a brilliant character that Stallone created there. You totally believe in him as this Vietnam vet who's kind of lost his place in the world. He's come back from the war and doesn't know the world that he's in anymore. And I think it's absolutely heartbreaking, that film. That then gets turned into action films with Rambo and Rambo 3. But the other films that stand out to me are probably ones that Matt has just passed off as being maybe not his best. Over the Top, that brought him home as a family film star. You've got a father and son getting to know each other again, against all odds. And whilst it kind of rehashes some of the Rocky script, it's just a nice family film. Cobra, stupid, over the top, corny, but good fun. But his last two films of the 80s I thought were really good, and they're not the ones that are held up as his best, but Lock Up was great. It had a lot of tension and some good action. Tango and Cash was almost a new kind of genre for him in this buddy cop thing, and I thought he played it well, and Kurt Russell was fantastic in it. Again, it's probably a bit of a silly script, but it was just delivered really well. Maybe it was a little bit too late for the 80s cop film at the very end of the 80s, but I think it's a really good example of the work that Stallone did in the 80s.
Okay, Graham, got any comments on what Gordon said?
I haven't seen the two Rocky films, but I've seen most of the others. I think films like Cobra and Tango and Cash, they're basically awful movies, but they're kind of great at the same time. So I know you're not a fan of Cobra, Matt, but I don't know, they're just cheesy movies and I get a lot of enjoyment out of them. It's funny what Gordon was saying earlier about Rocky and it giving the chance for Stallone to show his writing skills. I think really at some point he should have given up writing because he just wanted to create movies where he looked as cool as possible and he kind of didn't worry about anything else. And Cobra in particular, it was based on a book which was quite a good thriller, and he just basically excised all of that, and the result was kind of flat in comparison to the novel. But I think certainly I enjoyed a lot of his output of that decade, and although I don't think Cobra and Tango and Cash and Lock Up and films like that will ever win any Oscars, that doesn't mean I didn't enjoy them.
I think my problem with Cobra, and I thought this even when I first saw it, it's just everything that's bad about 80s action films, really. And I think they must have spent almost all the budget on his ridiculous car, bad AOR, rock music, and terrible outfits, and the whole bit at the beginning as well, where there's basically a guy just shooting a supermarket for no apparent reason. And I think, like you said, more effort was made to try and make Stallone look cool than was making it a decent film. But then they've got scenes in him where he's like cutting up a pizza with a pair of scissors.
I quite like that opening sequence the supermarket, and I love it when the bad guy says, "I've got a bomb and I'm going to blow this whole place up," and Stallone goes, "I don't care, I don't shop here."
Yeah,
I did laugh at that line, in fairness. Aside from Cobra, I do like Tango and Cash. I think that was good fun. I enjoyed it at the time, and I've enjoyed watching again since. The two standout films for me really were definitely First Blood, which I agree is a brilliant film. I think the message got lost a bit with Rambo and Rambo 3 being released afterwards. The message about you should respect your war heroes a bit better than John Rambo is treated. By turning him into an action hero, they kind of lost the message of the original film. and Rocky IV was my favourite from the two Rocky sequels in that era. It's classic mid-80s Cold War kind of scenario, and ultimately Rocky has a speech at the end where, oh, maybe we can all be friends kind of thing. Again, very cheesy 80s, but the difference between that and Cobra is that the soundtrack for Rocky IV has got to be, in my opinion, the best soundtrack ever made. They've got the electronic training theme music and then all these AOR rock things, which I've just been criticising, but in Rocky IV, they're brilliant.
It's one of the best montage sequences, that training sequence.
It is the ultimate 80s montage.
Oh, it's brilliant. You know, the training with the elements, and then you've got all the state-of-the-art equipment. A dog, absolutely stunning, that scene.
Si, have you got anything to say about Stallone's 80s stuff?
Amazingly, I've only watched Cobra when I was doing the research for this, and I didn't actually mind it. I like the cheese, I like his style, I like the sunglasses, I like the car, I like the whole thing. I've not seen some of the later ones, like Tango and Cash. I don't think I've seen that before. First Blood and First Blood Part 2. I did like those, especially Part 2. Enjoyed that one. Not seen a lot of the others, so I don't know a lot about Stallone. I'm more of an Arnie fan when it comes to 80s. So.
Handily, that brings us to talking about the Arnold Schwarzenegger films from the 80s. So, Simon, give us your favourite moments from Arnie during the 80s.
When it comes to 80s, I think Arnie, after a slow start to the 80s, Terminator obviously brought him to the front of action movies, and then suddenly he just got thrust into the action superstar status. Following on from Terminator, he had Red Sonja. Then it was Commando that came along next. Well, I particularly like Commando. It's just all about Arnie. He's retired, he's hidden away up in the hills. They come and take his daughter, and the film's about him just trying to get her back. And he's got a time limit, which is quite a good part of the plot. He's got to get there without him noticing. He's only got 11 hours to get this sorted out before they find out he's not on the plane and they're going to kill her. It's got one-liners in it. I love the bit when he's getting all the equipment together and he's getting all the makeup on his arms, getting all the bombs and the grenades together, and then he just goes away and kills a whole army on his own. And at the time, it had the highest death count in any movie up to that point, including the cardboard soldiers that blow up on the lawn when the building goes, but that's fine. They all count. The next big film that came along for Arnie was Predator. It's a bit different. He's not obviously one man killing a whole army, but he's just fighting one-on-one with this alien, which is quite an interesting concept. And what I love about this is just the way Arnie wants to get revenge on this alien. He manages to do that with just the basic weapon, setting traps and playing the alien at its own game. He covers himself in mud so the alien can't detect him. And by the end of it, him and the alien are just literally down to fisticuffs. I think that might be a bit strange for an alien to do that, but he obviously realises he is quite a foe. Again, it's just typical Arnie doing what Arnie does best. And then we had The Running Man, which, again, I quite like. It's futuristic, a bit more science fiction involved. He's got to go on this game show and they have to try and beat these other guys, the baddies. Arnie plays it well. He eventually kills everyone and wins everyone over. So I think after coming from the two Conan films, it's a sort of running theme with his films, very similar in style for a lot of them. Arnie killing lots of people and coming out all right at the end. I think his 80s films together played out into a really strong and engaging films, even though they are probably cheesy and they're just a typical format in nearly all of them.
Okay, Graham, anything to add?
I always thought that Arnie was suited to sci-fi films, so in this decade, The Terminator, obviously, as we've already spoken about, Predator, The Running Man were the films I liked the best, although probably The Running Man is the weakest of those. But I just think that Predator is such an amazing film. It's a great concept, and the background characters are all brilliant as well. They work very well together, and the conclusion of the film is always one of my favourite scenes. After all the technology and everything, it's just basically Arnie versus the Predator, mano or alien, and they have a good old fight at the end, which I thought was brilliant. And then right at the end of the decade, we got Red Heat, which I thought was a great little buddy cop film. And again, it's Arnie playing to his strengths. He's playing a straight-laced Russian with no sense of humour, no inflection of accent is required. He can just be straight down the middle, boring Arnie, and it fits the film perfectly, which I think is what really helps that movie and makes it so great as well, of course, his partnership with James Belushi.
Aside from The Terminator, I think Predator's my personal favourite. It starts off as what seems to be a pretty straightforward action film of a group of badasses go into the jungle, and then halfway through the film, it kind of flips into all of a sudden those badasses are being pursued by something they can't even see. It's quite unique. I don't think there's many other films that are like that. I think we ought to pick out this is the era that Arnie really perfected the one-liner, be it from The Running Man where he's fighting with the guy with the chainsaw and he kills him and they asked him where he went and he said he had to split and all that kind of stuff. You know, he's got so many one-liners and it became his trademark, really. And I think another thing that is obvious throughout a lot of those 80s films is that they like to pit Arnie against a lot of really angry, big, muscly men as well, particularly in Commando and The Running Man. They just keep pitting him against these big ex-pro wrestlers and all that kind of stuff, and he just wiped the floor with all of them. Gordon?
Yeah, I think you could quite easily say he's had, 10 films in the 80s, and 5, maybe 6 of them were crap. So you might think the 80s weren't great if you looked at it on those pure maths, but actually the films that were good were brilliant. Terminator, obviously, we've talked about. Predator, Running Man, I think they're all really good films at the top of his game. Graham said that Running Man's probably the weaker of his science fiction ones. I actually think Running Man's a really good film, and I still enjoy it more than some of his other bigger films. And the one film that I know I'm on my own with is Commando. I just can't watch Commando anymore. He's just so cheesy. And Matt, you mentioned his one-liners, and I think that's the film where he launched his one-liners, but he just did too many. The jokes were just relentless and they weren't funny. I did watch Commando recently, but I honestly don't think I'll ever watch it again because it left that much of a bad taste in my mouth. But that's not to diss Arnie's 80s. The films that he did that were good were absolutely brilliant.
I fall on the side of liking Commando, probably for the reasons that you don't like it, and it's quite ironic given that I hate Cobra for the reasons you like it, so I guess Commando is Schwarzenegger's Cobra.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
That brings round two to a close, and it's time for the voting once again. Let's start this time with Graham.
Well, again, it's a tough call for me because there's no doubt that Stallone had some great movies. And as I said earlier, although some of the movies are patently awful, I still enjoyed them a great deal. And although I think that overall Stallone's numbers stack up in his favour, the 80s period for Arnie was a lot more nostalgic period for me, thanks to The Terminator, Predator, The Running Man and Red Heat. I just love those films more than I love any of the films in Stallone's list for that year, so I'm going to go with Arnie again.
It's similar for me. I do like some of Stallone's stuff, but honestly, I think there's only two Stallone films from the 80s that I would really class as great films, which is First Blood and Rocky IV. On the flip side, Arnie's got four really great films from that era. Although box office takings beg to differ, I think Arnie really ruled the 80s for action films. So it's Schwarzenegger for me as well. Gordon?
This one is really tough for me because I always thought Stallone ruled the 80s. And again, pure numbers, I think Stallone has more great films in the 80s than Schwarzenegger did. But Schwarzenegger probably has his best ever films in the 80s, and the ones that are hits are massive hits. And it pains me to do it, but I'm going to vote Schwarzenegger.
God! It's the shock heard around the world.
I'm shocked, especially when, you know, you've got two Rocky films, which I absolutely love. You've got First Blood and the other films I've already talked about, but, you know, the quality of The Terminator, Predator, Running Man, I've got to give it to Schwarzenegger.
Wow.
I'll flog myself later for that.
Well, let's round it off then. Simon, is it going to be a full house for Schwarzenegger?
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I do like the Rambo films and the Rocky films. But for me, it's those big hitters from Arnie. So yeah, it's going to be a full house for Mr. Schwarzenegger.
So Schwarzenegger takes the points for round two, and it's one round all. Well, let's move into round three, which we're calling Highlights and Low Blows. This time we're taking a look at the 90s, an era that saw some great action films from both stars, but also some real duffers as their careers began to wane towards the end of the decade. Arnie kicked off the 90s in Paul Verhoeven's sci-fi thriller Total Recall before reprising his role as the T-800 in blockbuster Terminator 2, the highest grossing film of 1991. He also teamed up with director James Cameron again in 1994 for True Lies, another smash hit, but it wasn't all positive as The Last Action Hero, Eraser and End of Days failed to wow the critics despite still performing reasonably well at the box office. For Stallone, the 90s began with Rocky V, which disappointed a lot of moviegoers. Several action hits followed, including Cliffhanger and Demolition Man. While box office success continued, the critical response to films such as The Specialist, Daylight, and especially Judge Dredd was less than favourable. The low point was arguably 1995's Assassins, which was one of the few Stallone action films to actually lose money at the cinema. As he lost the previous round, let's hear the case for Stallone first, from Simon.
I'm going to be honest, there's a few in here that I've not seen for either a long time or not seen before, so I'm going to have to be a little bit picky with the films. Cliffhanger, I thought it was a pretty suspenseful type film, really quite enjoyed it, but the one for me that stands out already straight away is probably one of my favourite films of all time, and that's Demolition Man. I just absolutely love that film. Him, Wesley Snipes, just together just seem to work. Wesley Snipes plays his mad Simon Phoenix, and it's just the crazy way he plays that against Stallone trying to stop him. Sandra Bullock, I thought, was good in it. And I just like the whole concept of the futuristic San Angeles area. And I just thought it was a really great film. Judge Dredd. I do like the effects. The story is interesting, but it doesn't really stick to what the comics are about. I can see why it wasn't a critical success, but I think it was a brave attempt. I think he played what I thought Judge Dredd would be like. So, yeah, I thought he played the part pretty well, but unfortunately the critics didn't. Daylight is another particular high for me. I've seen it recently. He plays sort of like the hero that he's obviously disgraced at one point, comes back and tries to make amends by helping him get out of the tunnel. I thought the action sequences were good, especially at the start when the whole thing about the Lincoln Tunnel exploding. It was a fantastic set piece. But I just think there's a couple of big hits in there for Sylvester in the 90s, but there's also a few duds in the way. But yeah, The Demolition Man, for me, that's the whole of the 90s for Sylvester Stallone, and I love it.
That was quite a negative positive, that. I mean, I'm not going to lie and say every film was great. I do enjoy Rocky V. It's got the worst combatant in it, in Tommy Gunn. Not only is he the worst named, he's just the worst character in the whole
films. He is horrible.
Films. And there's nothing likeable about him, even when he's on the good side. That film, I still enjoy it, and I still do watch it reasonably regularly, but it wasn't massively appealing. The highlights for me are definitely the run that he had from 1993, really. You know, we had Cliffhanger, brilliant. Demolition Man, excellent. The Specialist, pretty good. Judge Dredd, stupidly fun. Or I'm stupid for thinking it was fun, I don't know. But it was fun even though it was possibly one of the worst that he did. And I'm not sure why Assassins failed as spectacularly as it did, because I quite enjoyed that as well. And then to end that run with Daylight, I thought that was a great run of films. So I think his output was pretty good. Nowhere near his 80s or 70s kind of highlights, but I enjoyed Stallone in the 90s.
Yeah, I think Cliffhanger and Demolition Man were definitely enjoyable. I watched Demolition Man again recently, and I've got to say the action sequences aren't that great in it, but it's actually more fun as a comedy film than an action film, in the comedy of this guy being in a time that he just doesn't understand, and the jokes about the little machines that dispense the credits for profanity, and obviously the three shells that you use in the bathroom, which is never explained, I don't think. It's not all action and it's not all comedy, it's a bit of both. And I think Stallone is probably at his funniest in that film, even though it's not necessarily meant to be a comedy. Daylight I also really enjoyed. The other ones, The Specialist and Assassins, I don't have any great fond memories of. Judge Dredd I've only seen once a very long time ago. I don't remember it being terrible, but I can't really comment on that. So Stallone's a bit of a mixed bag in the 90s, but I think some of the films were definitely better than the criticism that was levelled at them, for sure.
My highlight, like Simon, is Demolition Man, and I think this is the movie that proved, after the comedy flops, I know we'll be talking about them shortly, that actually Stallone can do comedy, and also he can do sci-fi as well, and I really wish he'd done a lot more sci-fi. The Specialist is another cheesy movie, but it's really great fun as well, and Cliffhanger was where he really, I think, started to reinvigorate his career in the 90s. And another favourite of mine, which Gordon mentioned, which I think is quite underrated, is Assassins, which, when it came out, I remember it got 2 stars in Empire, and Empire never gave 2 stars to big movies back then. And I just remember thinking to myself, it's not that bad. I don't know why they're saying it. I would say it's at least a 3 or maybe even 4 star movie, and it features a great performance from Antonio Banderas as well as the bad guy. So I'm a pretty big fan of Stallone's output in this decade.
Well, staying with you, Graham, now perhaps you'd like to tell us your favourite Schwarzenegger films.
Yeah, Arnie hit the 90s with a bang. He started off with one of my favourite of his films, Total Recall. I was a big fan of Robocop, like I think most of you guys are, and Paul Verhoeven, this was his next project. So when I heard that he was going to be directing a sci-fi film starring Arnold Schwarzenegger, it pretty much had me from there, really. And it's a great film as well, ultra-violent, loads of great scenes in it. I particularly like the scene where he's going through the scanner at the spaceport. That's a really great scene, well-directed as well. Then he followed that up pretty quickly with Terminator 2. I prefer the original, but it was still a great film and an absolute amazing smash. I think probably one of Arnie's biggest hits. Never saw The Last Action Hero. I understand it's not quite as bad as its reputation would suggest, but it was a bit of a flop, and Arnie did pretty well coming back with True Lies, which is a pretty good action movie, and Eraser, which I thought was pretty good with lots of nice exciting bits. The scene I particularly love in that is where the bad guys are assaulting a house in which Arnie and the girl he's supposed to be protecting are hiding, and they fire this horrible weapon that all these spikes go into the air and explode and go down at like 200 miles an hour or something and slice open anyone beneath them. But he opens the refrigerator and they hide underneath that while all this is happening. So that's quite a cool scene. And he ended it with End of Days, which again a lot of people didn't like, but I was a big fan of, especially as it features a pretty good turn from Gabriel Byrne as the bad guy, the devil himself.
I watched Last Action Hero again the other day, and I'd originally come up with a top three for the 90s, which included Total Recall, and I actually reconsidered and put Last Action Hero in third place instead, because I never really got on with Total Recall. For some reason, I just didn't quite like it as much as Arnie's earlier stuff. Last Action Hero, I really enjoyed the concept. It's not quite family friendly, because there's still a bit of violence and swearing in it, but it's got almost like a fantasy, almost like never-ending story kind of story, where the little kid can pass through into the cinematic world, and the cinematic world can come out into the real world. And I just thought it was funny and clever, and I don't really understand why it didn't do very well at the box office.
You know, that if you ask me any film that I think is criminally underrated, it's Last Action Hero. I think it's one of Annie's best films. Absolutely loved it, always have. And I just don't understand why people don't like it. It's a kid being able to go into the movies, which is absolutely wonderful. It's Arnie being Arnie. It's just a brilliant film. And there's the little jokes where, you know, Stallone's on the poster for Terminator in the video shop and things like that. It's making fun out of the action films that he's famous for, and it does it so well. And I think it's a great cast as well. I really don't understand why that film isn't hailed as one of his greatest.
Yeah, it's a bit of a strange one. It's interesting that while Stallone was making Demolition Man and making fun of Arnold Schwarzenegger being president, that Schwarzenegger was making Last Action Hero, where he made fun of Stallone being the movie star of the film that he really starred in. I thought that was quite funny, having watched both those films over the last week or so. Any other comments, Simon, about Arnie in the 90s? We should probably talk a little bit about Terminator 2, I suppose.
Yeah, that's a highlight for me. I mean, I love Total Recall. I absolutely love it. One of my favourites of Arnie's. But yeah, Terminator 2, I think it was a good follow-up. I think the special effects of the new Terminator and the way he can just get destroyed and literally, like liquid on the ground, gets sucked back together and can just reform again, and even more of a can't be stopped, can't be reasoned with. Even just nothing seems to be able to stop this guy. Quite graphic in the nuclear explosion in the town when she's watching through the playground fence. And, you know, if you have a look into the future, what's going to happen? And that's why it needs to be stopped. And I just like the idea of it. And it's got Guns N' Roses in it, so what more do you want? I'd be hard pushed to say if it is better than the original. I don't know. I like them both. Probably would say just the original Terminator. But actually, those early 90s films were probably my two favourite ones, Total Recall and Terminator 2.
I think the 90s were Arnie's golden age of Hollywood for him. This was where he got the big budget, explosive films. And I'd agree, Total Recall and Terminator 2 were probably two of his best. Possibly two of his three best films he ever made. And Last Action Hero was great. True Lies was universally loved. Has anybody been to Disney World and seen the 3D Terminator that's a bit of a live show and a 3D film as well?
No.
I'd like to.
It's absolutely amazing. And at the time, it was the most expensive film ever made. It was absolutely stunning. And they had live action people on the stage doing stuff. And they had a 3D film in the background that you wore your glasses for. And there's one scene where it's called Terminator 2 3D Battle Across Time. So he's got the motorbike and he's sat on the motorbike and with a shotgun. And this is on the screen in 3D. And he drives towards the screen. Then all of a sudden he's on the stage and a real bike is on the stage. And you don't see the join. It's just been done so well that it's almost seamless. And that was absolutely stunning. So Terminator 2, not just Judgment Day, everything else around Terminator 2 was just a phenomenon at the time. So I'm a big, big fan of Arnie in the 90s.
I guess the question is how big a fan of Arnie you were in the 90s as we move to the next vote. I'm going to go first this time. And to be honest, there's not even a competition. I think Stallone had some good films, but even his best films were not that great. I enjoyed Demolition Man, but it's got shortcomings. The same with Cliffhanger and Daylight. Whereas Arnie, again, has got the three or four big hits of Terminator 2, True Lies, Total Recall, and a lesser of a hit, Last Action Hero, but definitely a great film. So it's Schwarzenegger again for me on this round. Gordon?
Stallone had good films in the 90s. Schwarzenegger had great films in the 90s, so it's Schwarzenegger again for me.
This is amazing. You've been conning us all these years. Simon?
Not much the same. I do like Demolition Man. I love Demolition Man, but it's just the one highlight really for me. The others are quite good for Stallone, but no, it's going to be Arnie. Those two big hits at the start. Yeah, True Lies is one. I didn't mention that myself, but I like that as well. So the big hits are for Arnie.
And Graham, is it going to be another clean sweep for Schwarzenegger?
It's a clean sweep, yes. The only thing that perhaps could have changed it, you guys seem to think that Daylight's pretty good. If I'd have seen that, maybe I would have gone a bit more towards Stallone, because I do like my disaster movies, but I haven't seen it yet. So based on the movies I have seen, it'll have to be Arnie.
I think if you'd have watched Daylight, I think you'll like it if you like your disaster movies, but it wouldn't change your mind.
Okay, so perhaps slightly surprising, Arnie gets another clean sweep and wins round three, which gives him an overall lead of 2-1. One more round and Arnie takes the crown. So let's move on to round four, Out of Action. This round takes a look at all the films that don't fit into the typical genres that their two actors are best known for. So we're talking comedies, dramas and other roles that saw them outside of their comfort zone, although it should be noted that many of both actors' early roles were not action films. Stallone's roles outside of the action genre include the labour union drama Fist and 1940s wrestling film Paradise Alley, both released in 1978. He appeared as a goalkeeper in 1981 World War II prison escape slash football crossover Escape to Victory, and also as a taxi driver turned country singer alongside Dolly Parton in 1984's comedy Rhinestone. During the 90s, he returned to comedy with Oscar and Stop or My Mum Will Shoot, and had further cracks at comedy with Avenging Angelo and Grudge Match, in which he starred opposite Robert De Niro for the second time. The first time was in 1997's well-received Copland, for which Stallone gained an extra £40 for his role as a small-time sheriff. More recent drama roles include those in Driven, Shade and Reach Me, which holds a rare 0% rating on Rotten Tomatoes. Schwarzenegger's non-action roles have mostly been limited to comedies, although he did win a Golden Globe early in his career for 1976's Stay Hungry. Early appearances in comedy films included Scavenger Hunt and Cactus Jack, but his most famous comedies are The Quartet of Twins, Kindergarten Cop, Junior and Jingle All the Way, released between 1988 and 1996. In 1997, he appeared as villain Mr. Freeze in the dismal Batman and Robin, and his most recent step outside the action genre saw him play his first dramatic role for nearly 40 years as the father of a girl infected by a zombie virus in 2015's Maggie. So, with Stallone on the ropes, can he make a comeback? Graham, what do you think are Stallone's best moments from his work outside of the action genre?
Well, I think, in my opinion, definitely Stallone is a better actor, and I think that's shown in the quality of his non-action roles. Starting at the top, Fist, which was his first film after Rocky. Bit of a teaser, the title there. I'm sure a lot of people probably thought it was another boxing movie, but in fact, like you said, Matt, it's a union drama, kind of based on the life of Jimmy Hoffa, who was a famous Teamster boss. It's more of a biopic, really, following Stallone's character as he goes up from a sort of small-time union employee up to leading the union in the 60s and 70s. And it's a very well put together film. It was scripted by Joe Esterhaas, who was most famous for writing Basic Instinct. And then Paradise Alley again, a similar sort of film to Rocky, only this time with wrestling instead of boxing. He had a bit of a flop with Rhinestone. And then his comedy period, I think he had potential as a comedic actor, as was proved in Demolition Man. But Oscar in particular has got a pretty poor script. Stop or My Mum Will Shoot is a bit better. I remember enjoying that one quite a lot. And then really his best role in the 90s is in Copland, where, like you say, he put on £40 of weight to play the slightly deaf cop, and he's going up against a wealth of acting talent. He got criticised a little bit at the time that he didn't really hold his own against the likes of Robert De Niro, but I think he did, and I think it's one of his best roles, and overall Copland is a very good crime thriller as well.
Gordon, what do you think about Stallone's non-action roles?
Well, I think Stallone has had a massive non-action career that has been quite exemplary for an action hero. So the key ones that I'd probably pick out, I do think Escape to Victory is worth mentioning. You know, he was trained by Gordon Banks to act like a real goalkeeper, and I think for the most part he did a good job. I think there's plenty of his action films that you could class as dramatic rather than action. But as Graham has mentioned, Copland was on another level. He was really, really good in that film, and it took a lot of people by surprise. But when you look at comedies, one that I've only recently watched, and the reason I haven't watched it before is because of the critical panning that it got, and it's Grudge Match with Robert De Niro. The critics didn't seem to be able to get over the fact that this was Raging Bull and Rocky getting together and doing a comedy. And if they'd have just stepped back and saw it as what it was, it's a damn fine film, and I think it's one of my favourite films that I've watched in the last few years. It made me laugh out loud more than most comedies I've seen recently. So I think for drama, you just look at Copland, look at comedy, and you've got Grudge Match. That range, plus all of his action stuff, just shows what a talent Stallone is.
I would agree, those two films you mentioned are definitely two of his best moments outside of the action genre. I just want to mention, just in the interest of fairness, Rhinestone has got to be one of the worst. I mean, some of his comedies really were dreadful, and that's what drags this section down for him a little bit. Stop My Mum Will Shoot, I thought was okay, but I just felt embarrassed for Stallone in that, really.
I was at an audience with Sylvester Stallone a year or so ago, and he talked about that film, and he talked about how bad the rivalry between Stallone and Schwarzenegger was, and that they actually had quite a deep hatred for each other at the time, and they've become friends since. And this comedy came up, and his agent said to him that this film is being offered to Schwarzenegger, and Sylvester Stallone says he only took that film to stop Arnold Schwarzenegger getting it. And, you know, in hindsight, he probably wouldn't have done it if he'd have looked into it properly.
That's definitely not his worst comedy. Rhinestone, you might recall, we mentioned it a couple of episodes back, and that is just awful.
One last film, if I can just mention, because we haven't covered it yet, and even though we've covered Rocky's in action, I don't think that Creed belongs in the action. He won the Golden Globe, he was nominated for an Oscar, and the way that he portrayed the aging Rocky was absolutely stunning. So I think Creed definitely deserves a mention in his non-action.
Yeah, that's fair, because he doesn't participate in any action in the film either. Let's have a quick look at Schwarzenegger. Firstly, there's a couple of films he did in the 70s, or one's a film and one's more of a documentary. That's Stay Hungry and Pumping Iron. I haven't seen either of those, so let's move on. The good stuff is his comedies from the late 80s up to the mid-90s, so Twins, which I haven't seen for a long time, but I did enjoy it when I was a kid. I think it's a good, fun film. Also, I have to say, the scene with Kelly Preston in her underwear did make a very big impression on me as a 12-year-old. Kindergarten Cop, I think, is his best comedy film. It's got some really good scenes, and the chemistry almost that he has with the kids in the classroom is really good. Arnie's quite funny again, the fish out of water role. Jingle All the Way, I've not seen for quite a while, but I don't remember it being as bad as everyone makes out. It's a typical Christmas film. If you watch it at Christmas time, it's good fun, and if you watch it in July, then it's probably rubbish. The real standout for me for Arnie actually is not a comedy film. It's Maggie, which was released last year, which I've covered in a previous episode of the podcast, but I think it's just the fact that Arnie proves that he can actually act, and it scales back the sort of macho or comedic acting from most of his roles. It's actually not a very easy to watch film, but Arnie's really surprisingly good at it, and I think it shows that he is capable of more diverse roles than his career up to now has really suggested. And just to sum up the bad, well, Cactus Jack from 1979, the film was quite funny, but Arnie was terrible in it. The best actor in that was definitely the horse. And Junior, I watched recently, and it was pretty awful, but I actually thought, again, Arnie was quite funny in the first half hour or so, and Batman and Robin deserves absolutely no mention whatsoever. Simon, any thoughts on Schwarzenegger's non-action output?
I'm not a really big fan of Arnie's comedy films, to be honest. Twins is the best of them all. I liked his interaction with Danny DeVito. I think he adds a lot to the film. And there's a little bit of action in it as well, here and there, which is quite good. But Maggie, I watched it last night, and it was just such an amazing film. I just love the way Arnie plays it. Again, doesn't have to act too much. He just plays as a concerned father for his daughter, and the way he tries to protect her and the bond between them was just a very moving and very strong film. Very surprising. I did not expect that from Arnie. And it was really good. Jingle All the Way, can't agree with that. I can't stand it. I thought it was utter garbage. No fun.
It is April, and Matt did say, yeah, you know, watch it at Christmas.
Not so much keen on his comedy, which is probably most of his non-action films, but Maggie was a surprise hit for me.
Yeah, I'll just say that Maggie was really, really good and really surprising. For me, Arnie's two best acting performances are the original Terminator and Maggie, because they're scaled back with very few lines. And although in Terminator it's kind of emotionless, that takes some acting to be emotionless like that. In Maggie, it's all emotion, and he does it so well.
I think that pretty much quickly sums up the efforts of both men outside of the action genre. So let's vote. Gordon, who are you going for?
Sly All the Way. I think Stallone has got a varied and vast back catalogue of non-action films, whereas Schwarzenegger has got a few comedies that were quite good. I don't think there's a great film other than Maggie amongst his non-action films.
Simon?
I'm totally with Gordon. Arnie has got the three comedies, and Maggie, I'm not particularly that keen on any of the comedies, so just purely by having a lot more, and I think you can just do non-action films better. Definitely, for me, it's Stallone.
Okay, Graham?
Same again. Hard on for Stallone.
For me, this came down to Stallone's dramatic roles, because his comedies weren't very good, versus Schwarzenegger's comedies, because he hasn't done much drama. I think you just have to look at a 40-year career of doing a variety of roles and say that Stallone really does have to take it, even though he has got some stinkers in amongst it. So it's a full house for Stallone, and we're all square with two all. That brings us to our final round, which we're calling Fighting Back. In this round, we'll look at the action films done by the two actors from the year 2000 onwards. Arnold Schwarzenegger started the 21st century with two underwhelming action films, The Sixth Day and Collateral Damage, before reprising his role once again as the T-800 in Terminator 3 Rise of the Machines, which was still a huge box office success despite being inferior to the two earlier films. His career then took a major change in direction as he entered the world of politics and became Governor of California in a term that lasted until 2011, and during this period his movie appearances were limited to cameos, but in 2013 he returned to leading roles with The Last Stand, followed by Sabotage a year later. Stallone spent the early part of the new millennium, unsuccessfully trying to recover from his late 90s slump, with the critically derided remake of Get Carter and psychological thriller Detox being the only action-oriented films of note. His career was revitalised, however, when he returned to the roles that made him a household name in 2006's Rocky Balboa and 2008's Rambo, both of which proved to be box office successes. This era finally also saw the two actors share the screen for the first time, initially in Stallone's Expendables series, which also featured many of the biggest action stars from the last 30 years, and the two also co-starred in 2013's Escape Plan. And the two actors' most recent releases from 2015 fittingly saw them come full circle and return to their most iconic roles, as Stallone portrayed the aging Rocky Balboa in Creed, while Schwarzenegger starred as the now creaking T-800 once more in Terminator Genesis. So, with it all square, let's start with Arnie. I think this will probably be fairly brief, Gordon. What do you think are Arnie's best moments from the 21st century?
There are some in there. I quite enjoyed The Sixth Day. And Collateral Damage, I didn't mind. Terminator 3, I thought, was a reasonable return to the series. Nowhere near the heights of 1 and 2, but I still enjoyed it. But probably for me, the best films were Escape Plan and Maggie. There were a few not-so-good films, and I watched Sabotage recently, and that was absolutely awful. And Terminator Genesis, I was really not a fan of that. I'm not surprised it got the kicking that it did. But it was a reasonably good period for Arnie.
I think The Sixth Day, I enjoyed that a lot. I do like all of Arnie's sci-fi films, really. And I thought, although it got a bit ridiculous, all the clones popping up every 5 minutes. But I did think that was quite a good film. The Last Stand, I really enjoyed. I only watched that recently. I thought that was great fun. And my favourite out of those films is probably Escape Plan. Just a lot of these movies, especially films like The Last Stand, you just can't help thinking that someone who could act a bit better would be better suited to the role.
As I mentioned right at the beginning, I'm a big fan of all the Terminator films, and Terminator 3, yes, it wasn't as good as Terminator 2, but I still think it was a great film. I particularly loved, although it had nothing to do with Schwarzenegger, the fact that they kind of spiraled towards this inevitable judgment day, no matter what they tried to do, which I thought was quite good. And Terminator Genesis, you can pick the plot apart massively, but I did still enjoy the first sort of 25-30 minutes where it mimicked the beginning of the original and then put the twist on it of an older Terminator beating up the original Terminator that returned in 1984 in the original film. So I enjoyed it for what it was. It was another Terminator film, and you can't go wrong with them for me. So let's move on to Stallone then, and I'm going to start with Get Carter, which I know a lot of people, certainly the critics, hated it. I've never seen the original, so I didn't really assess it as a remake, just as a gritty crime thriller, and to be honest, I didn't think it was that bad. The Expendables series, it's a bit hit and miss. The third one wasn't great, and the first one I was a bit disappointed with the fact that there was this much hype meeting finally on screen between Schwarzenegger, Stallone and Bruce Willis, and it only lasted 2 minutes and had no action in it at all. But the second one I really enjoyed, especially the fight between Stallone and Jean-Claude Van Damme at the end, and also Schwarzenegger and Bruce Willis teaming up to kind of kick ass at the end of the film. Rambo was spectacularly good in that it was less than 90 minutes. There was virtually no plot. They just got on with it. Rambo, he comes along, does what he does. I think the critics didn't like this, but I loved the fact that it was unapologetically violent. It really did capture the violence of war, and it made no excuses for it at all. It was not glamorous in any way. There were people getting cut to shreds with machine guns and everything, so I thought that was really quite a brave move. But the big one really is Rocky Balboa, which was a triumphant return for his most iconic character. It's quite tragic at some points, but it's also really enjoyable to see the character in his later years. It's largely a retelling of the original film, really, with a different twist, but a fantastic film, and would have been a fitting end to the Rocky story compared to what I thought was a disaster in the form of Rocky V. But then they went and made Creed, which kept the Rocky story going. Any other thoughts about Stallone in the 21st century?
I've only recently watched Rocky Balboa and Rambo, and I thought they were both absolutely amazing, especially Rambo. It portrayed war in exactly how you would expect it to be if you were there yourself, and that just, to me, made it absolutely incredible. I haven't seen many of the others, but those two are absolutely incredible, and that's what I liked about Stallone in the 2000s.
We'll leave you to sum it up, Gordon, with Stallone in the 21st century.
Yeah, great. As the big Stallone fan that I am, I'm really, really happy that his career has picked up again. As you've already said, Rambo was a stunning film. It was visually really stunning. And for such a violent film, for the visuals to be so nice was a bit weird. And one thing I love about it is, you know, he's gone off to hide away and he doesn't want anyone to find him. And he's got this peaceful, calm life. And then he's dragged back into the hell that he doesn't want to be in. And you can see that in the performance that he gives, how much he doesn't want to go back to war. He's an absolutely wonderful actor in that film. But I'd also agree that Rocky Balboa is possibly his best film for 20 years. It was a brilliant reintroduction of the character without trying to make a caricature of him. I watched the film almost with my hands over my eyes because I was just sure Paulie was going to die in the film, and he didn't. He wrote a script that didn't need to give you any of these hard-hitting pulling at the heartstrings because there was enough of a story there without it. So I absolutely love those films. He's had his brain-dead films like Bullet to the Head, but as we've already said, Escape Plan, brilliant, and Creed, that was an award-winning performance. So Stallone's back on top as far as I'm concerned, and long may he reign.
Which conveniently brings us to the final vote. This is the decider, and we'll start with Simon. Who are you going to go for?
For me, it's going to be Stallone, literally, for Rambo and Rocky Balboa. I don't need to say any more. They're just incredible films.
Okay, Graham?
Well, I'm going to have to go with Arnie, just on the basis I've seen most of those films, and I haven't seen much of Stallone's output. Otherwise, I probably would have gone for Stallone, because it sounds like Rocky Balboa and Rambo are pretty good movies.
So that's one all. It's going to go down to the wire, it seems. I'm going to go for Stallone. I think it's pretty obvious, really. I mean, for a start, Schwarzenegger wasn't even active in movies for nearly a decade, but the movies he did do were not that great, apart from Terminator 3. But for me, just because of Rocky Balboa and Rambo, Stallone easily takes this round. So that just leaves Gordon. Are you going to make it a tie, Gordon, and vote for Arnie?
I've shocked you twice, but it's not likely to happen a third time. Arnie hasn't had enough films in the 2000s to really compete, and the ones he has had have been good but not great, and I voted the other way because Arnie's films were great and Stallone's were only good. But in the 2000s, even the bad films that Stallone is in, you know, he's in films like Reach Me, which I don't know if any of you have seen. It's a dreadful film, but Stallone is brilliant in it. And I think in the last 10 years, he's become a much better actor than he ever was. So it's without doubt a vote for Sylvester Stallone on this one.
So, despite going 2-1 down, the final result is that Stallone is the best action hero.
History once again, the heavyweight champion of the world, the Italian Stallion, Rocky Balboa.
Okay, that concludes our main topic with a victory for Sylvester Stallone. So let's move on to our next segment, which is Coming Soon, where we discuss some films that we're looking forward to in the near future. I'm going to kick this one off. The film that I've noticed that I like the look of is Central Intelligence. It's an action comedy directed by Rawson Marshall Thurber, who's got a hell of a name and was also the writer-director of Dodgeball. It's got the childish tagline of saving the world takes a little heart and a big Johnson. And that's because it stars Kevin Hart, the comedian, who's a little guy, and Dwayne Johnson, the former pro wrestler The Rock, as former high school classmates. Hart used to be the coolest kid in school, but now has a boring job as an accountant, whereas Johnson used to be the fat kid that everyone picked on, but is now a muscle-bound CIA agent. And he calls upon Hart's character for help with a case. Presumably lots of crazy action sequences and funny scenes ensue. I've watched the trailer for it, and it looks fairly silly in an enjoyable way. I've enjoyed stuff that Kevin Hart and Dwayne Johnson have done in the past, and also the director has got a reasonable track record of making funny films. Having said all that, it's definitely got the potential to be utterly dreadful. It's released on the 17th of June in the USA and the 1st of July in the UK, so we'll see how that turns out. Graham?
Not a lot, apart from the obvious ones coming out, like the Captain America movie, but the one that caught my eye was a film called Golden Years. I'm not actually even sure if it's going to get released or not, because there's very little publicity about it. It's supposed to be released in the UK and cinemas in the UK on the 29th of April. It's a story about a sexagenarian pensioner called Arthur, who goes on a bank robbing spree after the government pushes him too far and there's a collapse and he loses his pension and other things. And one of his friends, who's a World War II veteran, is attacked by lazy care home staff as well, or mistreated by lazy care home staff. So it's kind of a simple revenge movie, really, told with the angle of obviously that the people that are doing it are old age pensioners. And it just sounds intriguing, and the cast is pretty good as well. It's got Bernard Hill in the main role, and Philip Davis is in it, and Alan Armstrong as well. So it sounds as if it's got a good cast. So I'm quite intrigued by this movie, but I'm kind of wondering if it's actually going to see the light of day or not.
Okay, that sounds interesting. Gordon?
Mine's a little bit different. I've gone for Green Room, which is an ultra-violent horror thriller written by Jeremy Saulnier, whose previous film was the revenge thriller Blue Ruin, which scored extremely well with the critics and is something that I'm going to be checking out while I wait for Green Room to come out. It stars Anton Yelchin, who's the guy who played Chekhov in the recent Star Trek movies, and former Holby City actress Imogen Poots. But what's more interesting is that it's got what looks like a superb out-of-character role for Patrick Stewart, who plays a club owner and leader of a gang of vicious white supremacists who've booked a down-on-the-luck punk band called The Ain't Rights to perform at his isolated rundown club in the backwoods of Oregon. And what initially seems to be just a poorly received gig escalates into something far more sinister when they witness something backstage that they're not supposed to have seen, and then they've got to face off against the club's depraved owner and his gang of heavies who'll do anything to protect the secrets of their enterprise. And the Ain't Rights then have got to turn the tables on the captors in a climactic life or death showdown. And I'm a massive fan of hyper-violent stuff, and it sounds very much in the kind of ilk of Nicholas Winding Refn kind of films, and that's something that really appeals to me. It was screened at the Cannes Film Festival back in May of last year and was really well received, but it's taken over a year, or almost a year, for it to get its full release. It opens nationally in the UK on the 13th of May, but some people in lucky cities will get advanced screenings from the middle of April, which unfortunately isn't close to me, so I'll have to wait until the middle of May to see that.
Thank you very much. That just leaves Simon, who's got this episode's trailer pick. Simon, what have you gone for?
I've gone for an upcoming 2016 British spy thriller called Our Kind of Traitor. It was directed by Susanna White and is adapted from John le Carré's 2010 novel of the same name. It stars big stars, actually. Ewan McGregor, Damian Lewis, Naomi Harris, Stellan Skarsgård and Alice von Rittberg. The film is set to be released in the UK on the 13th of May. I've looked at the trailer. It looks quite an interesting, intriguing story of espionage. Two people who are just on holiday and just happen to sit next to this Russian money launderer, and he just takes a shine to them and wants them to, and then ends up getting them to help him defect to London, and it just gets the Secret Service, and the Russians are obviously not happy about this, and it just gets them all involved in something that seems to escalate quite quickly. Hopefully it'll be quite interesting.
Okay, well, let's take a look at that now.
Based on the novel by John le Carré.
You betrayed your country.
Stop staring.
He's the one who's staring, look.
Come have a drink with us.
Why don't you come to the villa for a small party tonight?
This is a small party.
I need your help.
Help you? What can I do?
I'm a teacher.
Give this to your MI6. Tell them you have a gift from the number one money launderer from the Russian mafia.
Is this all he gave you?
Yeah.
He told you he was a member of the Russian mafia. And you still agreed to help him.
I thought I could just hand it over and be done with it. He said that his children would be killed if I didn't.
You believed him?
Can't stop thinking about him. His family.
Never before have we had an informant this high up in Russian organized crime. British politicians, lawyers and bankers recruited by Russians here in London.
What does he want?
Asylum for himself and his family.
Trouble is, they'll only deal with us if you're there.
In Paris.
I can't get involved.
I'm afraid you are involved.
I'm a threat to Moscow, to Kremlin. I know where the money comes from.
I need proof that all these people are being paid.
You've stopped breathing, Professor. Calm. You'll have a heart attack.
Where are you hiding them?
Getting his family out. It's all that matters to him.
They'll kill them.
I can't guarantee your safety. They'll be coming after you.
Then you'd better hurry.
Money has no smell as long as there's enough of it. It doesn't change colour, it's still blood money.
Why did you choose me?
You've betrayed your country.
So what did we all think of that, Gordon?
I'll be honest, and I thought it looked like the most generic spy thriller that I've seen in a long time. It seemed like a TV movie that didn't need to be made. Not excited by it in the slightest.
Graham?
Yes, I agree with Gordon. I mean, apart from the fact it's got Damian Lewis in it, who I really like, and Ewan McGregor, I don't know, it just failed to excite me, really. I'm not a huge fan of John le Carre, but obviously his books are well known. It does look like one of his novels given a Hollywood gloss over, and didn't really appeal to me, but I would like to watch it, I think, and hopefully I'll be pleasantly surprised by it, because there's been plenty of films I've seen where the trailers haven't looked great, but yeah, and with Gordon, I'm afraid, it kind of felt glossy and empty.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think I feel somewhat the same way. I'm not really a big fan of spy films generally, and it has got quite an impressive British cast, so I assume it's a British-made film, and unfortunately that then screams to me that the production budget is probably not going to be that high, and therefore when it comes to the nitty-gritty of having some kind of action sequences in it, which presumably it might have towards the end, they're probably not going to be that good. So yeah, unfortunately didn't do a lot for me either. It seems like you might be the only one who's going to go and see that one.
Ticket for one, please.
Continuing the subject of movies based on books, inspired by the recent release of The Jungle Book at the cinema, the team are going to give us their top three book-to-movie adaptations. So, Simon, let's go with you first. What are your top three book-to-movie adaptations?
The top one for me is a book that's by H.G. Wells. It's The War of the Worlds. In fact, it's one of my favourite books. It probably is my favourite book of all time. So I have to go with the films that went with it. Two of them, the 1953 American science fiction film, which transposed the aliens from Surrey to California, and the 2005 film starring Tom Cruise, which didn't get particularly great reviews, but actually, when you analyse it, is actually a pretty good film, even though it's very, very, very loosely based on the book, mostly just by the name of it, but some of the ideas are the same. The other one I liked is another book that meant a lot to me when I was growing up, which is Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. So I like the 1971 Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, which was directed by Mel Stewart with Gene Wilder as Willy Wonka. It sticks very closely pretty much to the book. There's a few little extra bits where it goes off at a tangent, but on the whole it pretty much keeps to it, and I think Gene Wilder plays it really well. The last one might be a bit choice, is It's About a Boy. I really like the Nick Hornby book, and I actually quite like the 2002 film with Hugh Grant. It sticks pretty closely to the book, and I think it's quite an engaging film. I think everyone in the film played their parts pretty well, and Hugh Grant is actually more very engaging for once instead of just playing himself, which is what he normally does.
Nice, thank you. Gordon, what are your choices? What are your top three?
My first choice is Sleepers. The book was by Lorenzo Carcaterra, and the film stars Brad Pitt, Jason Patrick, Minnie Driver, Robert De Niro, and it's got a John Williams score that was nominated for Best Score at the Oscars that year. And it tells the story of four boys from Hell's Kitchen who were abused at a boys' correctional facility that they get put in after a prank with a hot dog van goes wrong. And years later, two of the boys, who are now in the criminal underworld, have a chance meeting with one of their abusers and end up killing the guy. And Brad Pitt's character, who is also one of the boys that was abused, is an assistant DA at that point, and he takes on their case to try and free them and get them off this murder rap. And the film's really good. It's a very good film, particularly if you haven't read the book. The book is far more brutal, far more shocking, and I'd recommend the book to anyone. If you've seen the film, read the book and it'll shock you a lot more than the film does. But if you haven't seen the film, it's just a great book anyway. And it turns out it's actually a true story. It was written as fiction, but it was more as catharsis for Lorenzo, who wrote it. And it's now been classified by the American Library as non-fiction. My next one is Steve Jobs. Based on the biography of Steve Jobs by Walter Isaacson, it's the only official biography that Steve Jobs has ever allowed to be done, and it was written while he was very ill, and he just wanted to leave a true story of his life. And it's a very warts and all kind of thing. You know, he didn't force him to leave anything out of the book. And the book's brilliant. It's very long, but it tells you all the dark sides of Steve Jobs. But in making the film of the book, they've basically taken elements and moulded a fictional set of scenarios around them, where everything that happens is true and did happen. It didn't necessarily happen in the locations, the time frame, or the order that the film suggests. And that's a really intriguing way to approach a biopic that cuts out all of the general life stuff and just gets these key moments and builds a story around them. A lot of people won't like it because they'll just look black and white as that's not how it happened, and it isn't. But it's a really engaging film. My third choice is Angels and Demons by Dan Brown, follow-up to his mega hit Da Vinci Code, and I found it to be far more interesting. And it's all set in Rome, which makes for a really visually stunning film. I'm not particularly keen on Dan Brown as an author. I think the films that come out of his books and the books themselves are just standard thriller fare. There's nothing new or groundbreaking apart from his skills as a researcher, he manages to dig up these conspiracies and then wraps a twisty-turny tale around them. So every one of his books follows exactly the same formula, but because he's such a good researcher, he's come up with these great conspiracies and these great facts and mythology and everything around them, and turns them into something great. Angels and Demons is, for my money, the best film that's been made of one of his books.
My three are the best. Firstly, I've chosen Stand By Me, the 1986 film, which is a coming-of-age drama based on the Stephen King novella The Body, which was part of Different Seasons, which is a collection of four novellas, which also features the Shawshank Redemption. For me, Stand By Me is certainly the most faithful and well-acted King adaptation until that later Shawshank Redemption film was released. I do still think Stand By Me was a better film, personally, although that might be slightly controversial. My second choice is The Thing, the 1982 version, directed by John Carpenter, which again is based on a novella, John W. Campbell's Who Goes There, which was originally published in 1938 and has actually been adapted to film four times, this being the most faithful to the book, unbelievably, with all those gross-out effects, as well as the best film. And my number one is a bit of a cheat. I've gone for a trilogy, the Lord of the Rings trilogy, based, of course, on J.R.R. Tolkien's beloved Middle-earth trilogy and one of the most successful movie series of all time. Pretty true to the book for the most part, although it does restructure the order of the story from the latter two books, The Two Towers and Return of the King, to make it flow better as a movie. It also omits some of the more outlandish parts of the book for the benefit of the movies, although some of these are restored in the extended editions if you haven't seen those.
My three choices are, first of all, Die Hard, which is based on a book by Roderick Thorpe called Nothing Lasts Forever, which was inspired by The Towering Inferno. He saw The Towering Inferno, this author, and basically decided to make a novel, or write a novel set in another tower block, and a tower block taken over by terrorists, and that's what happened, that's what he did. He wrote Nothing Lasts Forever, which was made into Die Hard. Interestingly, the previous novel he wrote was called The Detective, and that was also made into a film starring Frank Sinatra, but that's not on my list. Next on my list is Catch 22, which is one of my favourite books of all time. It's an anti-war novel by Joseph Heller. I can't remember exactly when it was published. I think it was in the 60s. But it's always struck a chord with me. Basically, the main character in it, Yossarin, he's trying to get out of the war by pretending to be insane. And he realises throughout the course of the novel that everyone is insane. So, and he's the only sane one, really. So the guy that's trying to get out of it by pretending to be insane is really the only sane one in the entire war. And it's obviously an anti-war novel. And they did very well in putting it into the big screen in 1970. It starred Alan Arkin in the main role, also Martin Balsam, and it was a pretty good stab at producing what was quite a difficult novel, really, to film. And my third, which is a film I've talked about a lot before, is based on a graphic novel, Watchmen by Alan Moore, which was by the aforementioned Zack Snyder. But I think he did a pretty good job of this, and although it is overlong, it did engage me throughout most of it, and it does have too much of the slow-mo again, but it's one of my favourite adaptations anyway.
We're nearing the end of the show, and that means it's time for one of our team to pick an original soundtrack that they will choose a track from to play out this week's episode. This time around, the OST choice is with Graham.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people will be expecting me to pick a score, but actually I've picked a soundtrack laden with pop songs, and it is the soundtrack to the 1998 movie Gross Point Blank, which is a story about a hitman played by John Cusack, who goes back to his hometown to attend his high school's 10-year reunion. So as a result, the music kind of veers between the 90s and the 80s, and a little smattering of the 70s as well, I think. But there's mainly a lot of 80s hits in it, such as Absolute Beginners by The Jam, Take On Me by A-ha, mixed in with 90s hits such as We Care A Lot by Faith No More and El Matador by Los Fabulosos Cadillacs, which are both very recognisable songs from the movie. And, of course, the classic Live and Let Die, remade a lot better, I think, by Guns N' Roses, which plays over quite an iconic scene in the film as well. And the one track I have chosen to play us out is the one famous track from the movie, or one of the famous tracks from the movie that I haven't mentioned, that's Blister in the Sun by The Violent Femmes. Not a particular fan of The Violent Femmes, but I think this song just matches the movie perfectly.
OK, thanks, Graham. We'll be listening to that momentarily. That wraps up this episode. All we need to do now is find out what's going to happen on the next show, which will be hosted by Gordon. Gordon, what's coming up for us on the next episode?
Thanks, Matt. For our next show, we're going to look at the much maligned genre of films as we explore whether video game movies really are all that bad. We'll look at the best and worst of games made into films, films about or influenced by games, as well as looking over the fence at how films have fared when made into video games. So join us next time as the Super Movie Moves brothers get their game on.
So that brings our mission to an end. We're ready to leave the Movie Muse bunker. So everybody, get to the chopper!
Can we just pretend like we have a normal doctor-patient relationship? I'll ask you a piece of advice. You give me an answer. You know, advice. Should I go to the reunion?
Yes, yes. Get out of town.
Thank you.
Go see some old friends. Have some punch. Visit with what's-her-name?
Debbie.
Debbie. Don't kill anybody for a few days. See what it feels like.
I'll give it a shot.
No, no. Don't give it a shot. Don't shoot anything.
Martin Blank. Listen, I just want to tell you that I don't want to work with you anymore. Things are going really well here. They're going a lot better than expected, and I just don't really feel like you're helpful in any way, and I don't think you're serious about the therapy. And so I want you to take a deep breath and realize that this is me firing.